implemented. It has faced intense criticism following the school shooting in Parkland, Florida, that left 17 people dead, the latest in a string of high-profile mass killings in the U.S. I'm Mike Hempen.
And Delta United Airlines also severing their relationships with the organization by no longer offering discounted fares to members to attend their annual meetings, and they're asking the gun rights group to remove any references from their websites. News and analysis at townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra.
It takes you to your place of work. It gets your kids to school, practice, recitals, and to visit friends and relatives. It takes you on your adventures, and it brings you home again safely. It's your car or light truck, and for most of us, it's our second biggest investment. So when your vehicle needs routine maintenance or major repairs, it just makes sense to go with the very best. Here in Shasta County, that means one thing: Advanced Automotive. Advanced Automotive is Redding's only shop that's listed on RepairPal.com, part of a nationwide network of shops that are regularly evaluated for superior training, guaranteed fair prices, and excellent customer reviews. And Advanced Automotive backs up their work with something you won't get anywhere else, a 24-month, 24,000-mile warranty. Don't just take my word for it. Log on to RepairPal.com, enter your make, model, and zip code, and read what your friends and neighbors have to say. Advanced Automotive, 5756 F West Side Road in Redding, 244-4423.
Hello once again. It's Boomer Tech Radio. I got to get this mic adjusted up a bit. There we go. I'm Bob Belongi.
And I'm Brenda Belongi.
Analog living in a digital world. Welcome to the program with goodies, gadgets, and gizmos. The tech news that you can use. Not sure why I'm having
technical difficulties?
Slight technical difficulties here on a tech show.
Of course. Because you're your own knobologist.
Because Leo Laporte has a whole troop of people to, do such things for him, and here it's just me. Hey, we're live today on KCNR, 1460, 530-605-4567, since I also answer my own phone. We'll ask you to be patient while I give Brenda something to talk about, and
I stumble all over my tongue while you're trying to do these things.
BoomerTechRadio.com is the website. You can certainly go there and find out sorts of that you can catch the latest podcasts. We've been posting them for a year, minus commercials.
Has it been a year already?
We started posting them.
March, August, or something like that?
We started posting on a regular basis to the Boomer Tech Radio website when we did CES. And then full podcasts, if you're into podcasting, you can, of course, subscribe through iTunes or Google Play Store or Stitcher. So lots of ways. You can also, of course, go to kcnr1460.com/archives. And you will find us. You will find our a picture from like 10 years ago. Remember the picture we took down by the river?
Oh, yeah. That's good, though. That's something you want to have out there.
Yeah.
At our age, that's something you want to have out there.
It is. It's a good thing.
Something like that.
So I just realized my charger had been sitting here. I left rather abruptly last Tuesday.
It's been sitting here since Tuesday.
Yeah.
Well, good. Somebody. Maybe lots of people have borrowed it, but
a very big thank you to people who have. We've had a there was a death in the family. I'm just going to leave it at that. And people who know me know the details, and the rest of you really don't need that level of detail. But thanks to the people who did reach out through Facebook and other means to contact me. But we
technology's great that way.
Technology, that's the good side of things like Facebook and Instagram and all that sort of thing. And I'm not one to overshare. In fact, I've kind of stayed a few steps back from Facebook and such things. Ever since the election.
I don't post at all.
Yeah.
Hardly at all. I'm more likely to text friends individually. I've always been preferred the, one-on-one contact that way. So
you're so old-fashioned.
I am. Old school comes to that. I admit it. I'm just not. The funny thing is, I do get on Facebook and follow some friends' activities. But if I want to talk to them about it, I don't Facebook them. I will contact them directly.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a mix of old and new, I guess. Anyway, so we've found some interesting stories. Bob found interesting stories for about tech this week.
Well, then there's a whole bunch of them, but I wanted to throw out one more thing. The technology of eye surgery. Absolutely. Having experienced it firsthand, we're not quite to Steve Austin's bionic eye from, you know, the $6 million man.
Yeah, we're not that far from
it. We are not that far, as a story we're going to do a little bit later on in the show will indicate. By the way, the stories that we kind of curate through, we select from a number of sources, since we do not have a vast army of reporters who go out and gather the news story. That would also be me. We curate a bunch of our stories through the Flipboard magazine. And you can actually go on Flipboard, get the app, download it for your iDevice or your Android or even your PC, although the PC version doesn't seem to work quite as well, in my humble opinion. But you can actually subscribe to Boomer Tech Radio Magazine. It's all three words together, Boomer Tech Radio. Search for it and subscribe to the magazine, and the little number goes up, and I smile more. Also, if you subscribe to the podcast, that is a thing that I appreciate a great deal. When I first started really podcasting, you know, I was like looking at the numbers every day, and that was like, okay, I'm just depressing. I'm just beating myself up looking at this. Now, if somebody listens, fine. If they don't, I still do a show. I'm not letting myself get all discouraged, because not everybody who listens to this show is inclined to go through the process of downloading and getting podcasts. But we managed to get a number of stories lined up this week. But the technology, well, in fact, let's go ahead and lead with that. There's been talk about ocular implants that can serve as both vision correction and as an information interface. But these lenses that I have had implanted in my eyeballs use a they're sort of like Fresnel lenses because a standard ocular implant is good for one distance, unlike your natural lens where muscles contract to let your eye focus on objects that are near and far until they can't anymore, and which is why you need the glasses. The first generation of these cataract implants gave you one distance. Well, now you have multifocal, which are sort of like, if you know anything about stages or lighthouses and things like that, they're a Fresnel lens. The best example I can think of a Fresnel lens is, you know, those little flat magnifiers that you can carry around in your wallet. They have little grooves all over them. That is a Fresnel lens, and it is a close-range magnifier. And that essentially is what the Fresnel lens that goes in your eye. It's a little more elaborate than that, a little more expensive than that. But I am here to tell you that if you are of an age where cataracts are starting to become an issue in your life, and you've been holding off on a surgery, go ahead and do it. If you've got the, if your insurance will cover for it, it makes such a difference. For one thing, I've noticed that my colors have come back. It's
red, green, blue.
Mostly blues, because
purple,
your eye
pink. You remember the balloons in kindergarten?
Yeah. Like,
you know your colors again.
Right. Well, like a pane of glass or a piece of plastic exposed to sunlight over those UV rays over the years, the tissue in the lens yellows with age. Well, gee, okay, I can deal with that. The new lenses, though, are now letting light through that wasn't coming through before. So first thing I noticed is that everything is blue.
That strikes me as odd because everything isn't blue, but obviously the blue light is coming through.
The blue light is more noticeable.
Right, so blues have intensity, whereas they didn't before.
Especially with daylight and LED lights, which have a high... Now, it's settled down a bit. I mean, at first, I was a little overwhelmed. But it settled down, but the colors are far more vivid than they were. So,
as they should be.
Yes. Researchers at Harvard School of Engineering and Applied Sciences say they have come up with a lens that has in it an artificial muscle. Now, this isn't just for upgrading the or repairing a human eye.
Yeah, this is an eyeball lens that they're ultimately headed for, but they're just talking about a lens.
Yeah, it's called a meta lens, and it has a flat, electronically controlled artificial eye. And we're working on ways to, you still can't directly hook up a TV camera to the optic nerve and expect anything positive to happen. But we're getting close of ways to simulate the signals that the eye puts out in a way that the brain can interpret them. And it's interesting how the brain can take these signals and very, very quickly start making sense of them. It's like when you, good example here, when you, if you wear glasses, when you first put on a new pair of glasses, what happened?
Your feet go away.
Yeah, you go downstairs and it's like, ah! And so it is with these new lenses. The brain starts putting together a picture of the world that it expects.
Kind of corrects it.
Yeah, it automatically corrects the images.
Neurologically.
So while neither eye is good at all distances, the composite image that I see is pretty darn clear. And this is just 2 days after the second surgery. So doctor's very happy. Dr. Crum and company over at Shasta Eye, help me out here, Shasta Eye, I want to say Associates, but Shasta Eye Medical Group?
I think that's it, yeah.
Great folks over there. So these, this is the next big thing. Well, there's a lot of big things coming up, but these, imagine an artificial implant for your eye that can vision correct, it can filter, and if you so desired, could actually be used as an informational display. Now, that's a little extreme.
Well, it possibly is coming at some point, right?
Yeah.
The other thing, too, is if you think about this, this kind of lens that has some flexibility in focal whatever, how is that going to change cameras, for instance, potentially?
Right.
Robotic cameras?
Mm-hmm.
Medical devices that are in there looking around? And I can see all kinds of possibilities for that, that it gives more flexibility. It's not just a fixed focal lens, that it may have some flexibility to kind of be tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah,
there.
Now these meta lenses, about the size of a piece of glitter. They are very complicated structures with internal nanostructures that are smaller than a single wavelength of light. When you think about it, that's
pretty fine.
That's pretty darn tiny.
Yep.
So these devices are going to give us new ways of looking at the world. They're going to give us, as you said, anybody who's had a scope put into various places knows that that's not the most enjoyable thing in the world. It's a lot better than it used to be. But for like having a scope put down your esophagus or having one placed at the other end.
Most of the time you're knocked out.
Yeah.
You know, you're not aware of it. Thank goodness.
Well, my first one, I was not out and I was not very happy about the whole situation.
It's probably because they blow you up like a puffer fish.
But anyway, imagine these imaging devices that are so small, you don't even know it. There's talk about imaging devices being implanted into a capsule that passes through, takes its telemetry, and then when it has finished its job, you eliminate it naturally.
Ew.
Yeah, well.
On the other hand.
Obviously, they're so cheap, they don't need to worry about getting it
right.
back.
And it's, what do you call it, much less invasive in many capacities.
Yeah.
Yeah, ways to think about it.
So these new optical systems really making a big, big difference in fields of medicine. And look for that to improve. Speaking of optical things, according to an article appearing in Computer World, a growing trend at... Now, remember Google Glass? It was a relative flop because people were wearing these things in public and creeping people out.
Right.
Yeah. Well, smart glasses are probably the next thing. Imagine all the power of your mobile device, or maybe have it coupled to your mobile device, in a pair of glasses where instead of an implant, the heads-up display is simply right there in front of your eye.
Right, so that kind of defines smart glasses, in case you were wondering what those are.
These now, what would you want these for? Well, if you are working on a factory floor, or if you're doing manufacturing, or if you're doing something delicate, like an operation or something, rather than having to look away... let's say you're doing some complicated mechanical process that's even more delicate than what necessarily a robot can handle. You need an update of information.
Right.
And these smart glasses display that information in real time right in front of you without you having to take your gaze off of whatever it is you happen to be working on.
Right. So the
head-up display.
The thing that's different about these kind of smart glasses is that up to this point, they haven't really been wearable all the time, but even the Google Glasses, so on and so forth. So these that they're talking about are going to look like eyewears that exist
right
today. What's interesting about that is, does everybody have to wear the same frames? You know, ultimately, that's not going to go over real well.
Right. We're back to ecosystems.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Mac versus IBM. Samsung versus Apple, it's this versus that.
Yeah, and there's already some rivalry that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be big money.
I think augmented reality is going to become a reality.
Oh, yes.
Instead of looking up, for instance, let's say you're a tourist in a city, and you are there on a business trip, doesn't matter. You're even at home, it doesn't make any difference. And you're wandering around, you know, where's the pizzeria? Oh, what's that building? And when you look at it, the glasses are going to know where you're looking, where you are. I mean, mm-hmm. they already have Google Street View, right?
Right.
And so that information is available, and it would be fed into the glasses. You know, that's Joe's Pizzeria or ABC Bank or something like that.
Correct.
And if you're looking for a particular office or whatever, I just passed it up. If you're driving or something like that, I can see where this would be distracting and not useful when driving. But if you're walking or whatever, it will tell you a lot about what's going on. It taps into that Google Earth data set already there and displays it for you right there in front of you.
Now, we've already seen a product where blind people can put on the headset and a person at the other end helps them make their way. There's
right.
a curb right in front of you. The apples are about 6 inches to your left, no, a little more to the right. Okay, if you're all done for the day, I'm signing off, sort
right.
of thing.
Right.
And this would make talk about the mobility made available suddenly to somebody who otherwise would be completely homebound or shut in.
Right. It's amazing. And ultimately, there'll be an AI that can do that. You won't even need the human.
Right.
It'll have image recognition is, you know, the difference between an onion and an apple, or even the difference between a red apple and a yellow apple. And it could read signs. It could do all kinds of things.
Yeah. The light is now green.
Right.
The curb is 6 inches ahead of you.
Yeah.
Here comes a bus. Stop.
Yeah. It's all kinds of things like that could go on.
Now,
so Apple has a version of a glasses. Samsung Galaxy has a version. Intel Vault. I'm not sure how they're saying that. I would say Vaunt. And even VSP. Now, VSP, I forget what VSP stands for, but we have VSP Vision Insurance.
Yes.
So it's an optical services company is looking at that. So they provide eyeglasses. Well, you know, they don't do it themselves. But anyway, I wonder if it's the same company. I'm going to assume that that's the case.
Now, what's interesting about the Vaunt is that it uses a very low-powered laser, one would hope, to project the image directly onto the retina of the eyeball. Now, already, when I went in for my implants, for my lenses, laser scanned the structure of my eye in order to get super accurate measurements
to determine What lens to put in.
Correct.
And they can actually build a prescription, and that's exactly what they've done, is they've built a prescription into your replaced lens.
Yeah. What this does is that it actually projects information and graphics to talk about a retina display.
That's crazy stuff. So
you're the only one who can see it, and you simply pull the glasses off. They when you put them on, they look like ordinary glasses, and they have this... now, I know somebody's going, I'm not going to have anybody shining a laser into my eye.
Well, maybe there is some things to that. It may create a certain kind of cataract or something. Mm-hmm. And you only have one set of eyeballs, but you know what? Eventually, I think they're going to create the Geordi LaForge from Star Trek Next Generation,
yes.
You know, the visor and or whatever that you have bionic.
But it won't even look like a woman's hairband wrapped around your front of your face.
No, but you'll have bionic eyes built in or some kind of things like that, I'm sure. So this is... being referred to, this article is a little optimistic. It says, you know, this is coming soon.
We've heard that one before.
Yeah, I don't think this is that soon. First of all, the cost of this is not within everybody's reach. And if these are going to be required at work, then the company is going to have to provide them. And there's all kinds of practical issues like that. But ultimately, they have what part of this article is about is... BYOG, which I think should be bring your own grog, but in this case is bring your own glasses. And the hard part about this for companies is that if people bring in their own devices, that there's a lot of IT security issues here, potential IT security issues. And so the IT security, my response is... IT security people, you better get on it because this is going to happen.
Yeah.
And a company then, if a company provides them, of course, then they can control the security of the device and that sort of thing. So, you know, any manufacturing or any kind of a business that would require their people to wear these, that's how they're going to have to control that security, IT security thing. You say, well, how does that work? Well, if you have Bluetooth communications... or little processors in these glasses and whatnot, and they're interacting with a company's computer system, that is an avenue for hacking, malware, all kinds of things that could come in via those glasses, which are not controlled by the company, and that outside things coming in. So there's a lot of issues here before this becomes something that's going to be ubiquitous.
Also security, information security.
Well, yeah.
Remember the stuff of 1950s and 60s movies was microfilm.
Yes.
You know, the little Minox spy cameras.
Exactly. So that's part of that security issues, that if you work in a, let's say, a... military technology plant,
mm-hmm.
Take pictures of the technology.
Right.
And then those get sent out, you know, later on or whatever. So this is why I don't think this is real practical. It's like they're coming soon to a place near you. No, they're not.
There's hurdles to overcome.
Oh, big hurdles.
I recall, and I don't even remember the movie, but I remember the scene, a guy walking through a sensitive area. And he was kind of scratching his head and tapping his temple. Well, it turned out later in the movie, he removes his eyeball and takes out the film and develops...
It's a camera, yeah. His eyeball's a camera.
Are we not there, you know?
Well, we might be, but that's some pretty desperate measures on the part of somebody, and that's not going to be an everyday experience for the rest of us. But I feel very confident that it's probably the technology will emerge and it will become fairly common.
Yeah.
I have very little doubt
of
that.
If you had a glass eye, imagine you've got a fair amount of space inside that thing to work with.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of space in there.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens, even to the point of people who have lost their sight, perhaps being able to get a bionic eye, that because the optical, unless the optical nerve is damaged.
I can make it better. Faster.
Yeah. There's that, too. It seems like as so many things with science fiction, they seem to become reality at some point.
We are living in that world, and that world has some scary things in it.
Well, there's that, too.
But it also has great opportunities in it. So, and that is the purpose of this program, is to talk about not only the scary things and not only the stuff you should be concerned about, but things that... It's useful to know.
Well,
if not useful, at least entertaining.
If, you know, at some point you used to think you lose your sight permanently. Well, maybe not so much.
Indeed. We have a friend who is blind who probably could, had he lived longer, benefited from this technology.
Absolutely.
Boomer Tech will continue after this.
From working families to small businesses or government agencies, it's important to have quality care for the cars and light trucks that are essential to getting the job done. Here in the North State, that means Advanced Automotive of Reading, where they pride themselves on old-fashioned honesty, quality personal attention, and personal responsibility to get the work done right the first time. Why else would they be able to offer a 24-month, 24,000-mile warranty on their repairs? Every mechanic at Advanced Automotive is an ASC-certified master technician who takes pride in their work, something that's earned Advanced Automotive recognition from RepairPal.com, the leading provider of auto repair and maintenance information to consumers. From the family minivan, your daughter's first car, or a yard full of company vehicles, Advanced Automotive should be your go-to repair shop. Advanced Automotive of Reading, 5756 F Westside Road. Call 244-4423 or check the customer reviews at RepairPal.com.
Hello, this is Lance Beck, president of North State Security. As we celebrate our 50th year of serving the Northern California region, North State Security would like to give something back to our community. During the year 2018, our 50th, in the sorrowful event your family were to lose a loved one, North State Security offers to provide a state-licensed uniformed security officer at no cost to protect your residence during the celebration of life or funeral to offer further peace of mind. Knowing thieves prey upon homes left vulnerable during these mournful times, allow us the honor to help you grieve with one less detail to be concerned about. Call us, North State Security, at 243-0295. While utilizing the service of North State Security, we handle a myriad of different responsibilities from nightly patrol service. We do special responses where you call us and we can respond to your immediate need. We can be there in an average of 10 minutes. Once again, that's North State Security at 243-0295.
Your home. It's where the sunrise starts your day, where you entertain the closest of friends, where the family gathers around the dinner table, and where your memories are made. Reading's largest home builder, Palomar Builders, is building those memories every day. They invite you to discover the residential community of River Point in South Reading. These quality-built homes include large, deep lots surrounded by mature oak trees, RV parking, energy efficiency, truly exceptional interior and exterior features, designer kitchens with granite countertops, and stylish master suites. With its tree-lined streets, River Point provides quality living at reasonable pricing with many floor plans to choose from. With prices starting at $299,800 for the home of your dreams. One of our featured homes, a brand new 4-bed, 2-bath home with a 3-car garage and over 2,000 square feet of living space, was just completed at River Point Subdivision. Featuring granite countertops, a beautiful cozy fireplace, green technology, and a huge landscape backyard. Listed at under $361,000. Contact Debbie Morgan of Coldwell Banker CNC Properties for details.
Purpose-driven banking. That's the vision behind the founding of Five Star Bank in 1999. Services inspired by partnership and defined by shared vision and goals. Five Star Bank, a champion of local economic development and community stewardship. Your success is their success. Now that's smart people doing good business. In a world that's both more connected and more isolated by high tech, Five Star Bank brings you a personal touch to small business banking, cash management, and online services. Five Star Bank, consistently rated among the very best by industry associations, rating agencies, and of course, customers and partners just like you. Your partner in success is Five Star Bank. FiveStarBank.com. Visit your local branch at 358 Hartnell in Reading. Progressive, professional, personal. That's Five Star Bank. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Good, honest, reliable. More than two decades ago, an auto repair shop opened in Reading based on those simple principles. Advanced Automotive is still family owned, continuing on with those same ideals. So simple, yet rare in today's world. Modern cars and light trucks have grown more complex in the past 20-plus years, but those founding concepts still hold just as much importance when it comes to safety, reliability, and value for your dollar. Advanced Automotive of Reading promises that your vehicle will be serviced confidently by a technician with the training and knowledge to make professional repairs. Read what your friends and neighbors have to say about Advanced Automotive by going to RepairPal.com, where you can get an instant estimate of what you can expect to pay for your service or repair. Honest work at a fair price. It's not all that complicated. Advanced Automotive of Reading, 244-4423, or stop by 5756 F West Side Road. Every week, goodies, gadgets, and gizmos on Boomer Tech Radio broadcast and podcast. That catchy theme music composed and performed by George Wood. It's called 8-Bit Junkie, and we got it off the PodSafe Music Network. Also, great big shout-out to Advanced Automotive of Reading, who sponsor our program locally. We do appreciate their continued support. We thank you for your support. Remember the Bartle James. Yes.
And thank you for your support.
And thank you for your support, yes. Article that appeared in Inverse website. One of the cool things about the whole Star Wars
franchise
is, of course, the droids. And, of course, the original story arc, the droids were R2-D2 and C-3PO
were
tied
characters.
They tied everybody together. They tied the story arcs together.
Mm-hmm.
And that was George Lucas's vision, is that they were the viewpoint that experienced, they were the common thread throughout the story as the characters all moved towards each other. And they kind of drifted away from that with the second series, and now the third series, of course, with the introduction of BB-8 as the cute droid of choice, thereby bumping aside R2-D2. Was actually the more practical, according to a roboticist, the R2-D2 model is actually far more practical than BB-8 because there have been attempts to recreate BB-8 with his magnetic drive, and the beach ball tends to get stuck in the sand easily.
Oh, yeah, and, well, because it's heavy, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. So even with it works great on a smooth, flat surface, but the minute you put them out in the sand, particles stick and the head flies off. So not a good thing. And do we really need a humanoid robot? Because the human frame for doing various tasks is not that perfectly well suited. Now, as an interface device, as a companion, would we want a humanoid-esque robot? Most likely. Human cyborg relations, as C-3PO famously says. But in the case of Star Wars, the R2 series of robots can do things like in space repairs, and several plot points revolve around R2-D2 coming to the rescue and repairing some essential piece of equipment like the hyperdrive or the lateral thrusters or something at the last possible second.
Right.
That's happened several times throughout the franchise. Those are the sorts of things, according to Texas A&M University researcher Robin Murphy. He says that's why you would have these helpers in space to do things
we can't do.
That we can't do. And we do stuff on the, in fact, there are some robots being tested out for use aboard the International Space Station. And when we make the trip
spacewalks?
And when we make the trip to Mars, robots will be along for the ride to work in the hostile environment. If we have a nuclear-powered ship, those devices will be needed to go in and maintain and make necessary repairs in the hazardous areas.
You mean Mr. Spock didn't have to die after all?
He didn't have to die after all. They could have sent in the robot.
Yes.
In Wrath of Khan.
Yeah. We think about it, that would have made a whole lot more sense.
Yeah.
But it's not nearly as much fun.
But in popular science fiction robots, in most popular science fiction, robots are the bad guys because we don't want to alienate anybody else. But so we make robotic bad guys.
Also, the bleeps and boops that
R2-D2
makes could actually have a very practical application in communications.
Transmits a great deal of information with just a single. A tone means a whole different bunch of things.
Yep.
And it's kind of like hands in baseball. They communicate volumes of information with hand gestures.
Right. And sign language is the same way for deaf folks. And the other, I just kind of had this vision of things with all this information. And it's the thing from Guardians of the Galaxy, pick on movies again with science fiction, of I am Groot. And that's all he ever says is I'm Groot.
But it's in the intonation.
You're right, it's the intonation and context that they translate that. So all of these beeps and whatever. But if you remember R2-D2, he would have a very excited beeps and boops. And then he'd have the...
We have a dog that does that.
to convey some sort of emotion, which is ridiculous in a mechanical device. But at the same time, it's fun.
Now... The very first Star Wars movie, which was, of course, Episode 4, A New Hope, but it was the first movie released all the way back in the 1970s.
First movie made.
Who didn't, when R2-D2 gets jumped by the Jawas and shot and he falls over, who didn't go, oh!
That's right. You have some emotional attachment to these devices.
Yeah.
Know? And so, although I admit that a device like that could certainly convey a certain amount of urgency to a message, sort of like, you know, sending an email with high urgency. It could get ignored, though, just like those emails do, but I don't think that would happen in the long run. But adding some human personality and personification, if you will, to the devices does make them
seem more user-friendly. Anthropomorphize.
Yep.
I think that's about as close to that word as I'm ever going to get. The inanimate objects, just like we do to our pets.
Sure. And
ascribing human emotions and feelings to non-humans.
But if you have a robot like C-3PO that is humanoid in appearance, it's hard not to do that.
Right.
Because they take on a human form.
Yeah. And as companion robots, both for medical purposes and for, shall we say, entertainment, recreational purposes. And mark my words, it's not just guys getting girl robots. That's the popular image. It's going to be both sides of that street. You roll your eyes. Watch. You watch. You watch what the market's going to do.
I'm not rolling my eyes at that. You're absolutely right.
Let's see here. You've heard us talk about... graphene. Now, graphene is it sounds like something
you drink,
or that Jordy LaForge is making stuff out of on the holodeck there. But graphene is actually a single atom thickness of carbon atoms linked in a flat mat. It has some very interesting and very useful
characteristics.
Yes. Made completely out of carbon. It's a two-dimensional sheet. It has essentially no thickness that you can measure. Stronger than steel and can conduct electricity with very little resistance. It was first discovered in 2004. Billions of dollars have been invested in it. Even a Nobel Prize given for the discovery. But what are we actually doing with it?
So remember, graphite.
Yes.
Is pure carbon.
Mm-hmm.
And graphene is spelled not graphine as in graphite. It's graphene.
Mm-hmm.
Just as a point of trivial detail.
Graphene has the potential, let's underline that, has the potential to revolutionize everything from electronics to fabrics to construction materials because of these electrical and physical characteristics. You thought carbon fiber, you know, right now in sports, carbon fiber is golf clubs, arrow shafts, boat hulls, all made of carbon fiber. Graphene takes those same characteristics to a whole new level.
Right. So remember building the little water molecule models in school with the styrofoam balls and toothpicks and things
like
that.
Right, right.
This is, and you got some kind of three-dimensional object always when you built those little models of molecules. So I think that's stuck in most of our brains about that structure. Graphene is very different, whereas a model of a water molecule, for instance, is rather three-dimensional, and the more complex the molecule, the more three-dimensional it is. I mean, the more dimension it occupies. Graphene is all in one plane.
Yep.
So it there's no 3D to it.
Right. So one of the first applications you're going to see, remember OLED screens, organic LEDs?
Mm-hmm.
Very expensive to produce at first and then became more affordable as time went on. One of the first applications you're likely to see graphene is a layer of graphene applied to an OLED screen.
Mm-hmm.
The result is a screen that you could drive a truck over and not hurt, because the same things that make the same characteristics that make a diamond are present in a graphene layer.
Mm.
So
very tough.
You could have an essentially indestructible cell phone screen, something that everybody who's ever dropped the phone and broken it would be very happy to hear about.
Well, think about the implications in a car windshield.
Oh, yes.
It would be interesting to know how much impact they could take, not just putting a lot of weight on it, but how much impact they could take. It would be interesting for that. So this article who quotes a physicist named Les Johnson from NASA's Space Marshall Flight Center. He wrote a book called Graphene, the Super Strong, Super Thin, and Super Versatile Material that Will Revolutionize the World. Interesting idea. He says even if 10 to 15% of the ideas using graphene actually come to fruition, those 10 or 15% of the ideas using graphene are going to have huge impacts on us, is his assertion.
Well, let's talk about energy. Right now, a significant portion of the energy that we drink up is waste heat.
It's actually wasted, yeah.
Yeah, it is resistance in materials, which is why your computer gets hot, which is why electric lights get hot, things like that. Now, LED lights are much cooler, but if we have room temperature superconductors, and that's been a holy grail of physics for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Graphene is not quite a superconductor, but it is a very highly conductive material. It's nearly zero.
Very efficient conductor.
And if we can, the amount of energy that is wasted simply pushing electricity through copper wires and things like that is enormous. Take that and start applying these advanced materials to electrical conductors, suddenly your energy usage drops without having to build a single new power plant.
Right, because the transmission is far more efficient.
Right.
The supply is much higher.
Imagine, you know how hot a personal computer gets. You know how hot your laptop gets when it's working really, really hard.
Right.
If you start building processors with graphene conductors inside, suddenly your heat footprint drops off dramatically. You don't have to have as big of a battery. Batteries themselves will become thinner and lighter and less prone to doing things like hoverboarding in your lap.
Or you can take that waste heat and recycle it in so that the, shall we say, amount of grid electricity you use is greatly reduced.
Mm-hmm.
There are ways to utilize waste heat that way, too.
Yeah. So interesting stuff, and it will be worthy of keeping track of.
Seeing where that goes, yeah. Yep.
This coming week,
there was a phenomenon in the sky the other morning.
Oh, absolutely!
Morning,
yeah, let's
I
go back to that. I was going to do the Mobile World Congress. We'll come back to that. Let's see here. Where is that? Well, we had a lot of distractions back on
all
week long, including my surgery and other stuff. SpaceX did a launch from Vandenberg Air Force Base on Tuesday. And it apparently some people up here in our listening area in Northern California saw the launch.
Far Northern California.
Far Northern California saw this glowing vapor, this glowing trail in the sky that literally looked like a crack in the sky. I've seen this phenomenon when I was living in Southern California. They did a missile launch, and the trail, as it catches the light, it's frozen ice crystals in the high atmosphere,
And it
brilliant.
Was glowing. And we're going, what the? What is that?
Right. So what you have to recognize is that in the wee hours of the morning, the sky may be getting lighter. But at the altitudes that rocket operates, it's in full sunlight. So this is why the vapor trail of the rocket shows so brilliantly, is because it's in full sunlight. But, of course, you're down in the murk, still on the surface of the planet, because you're around the edge and the sunlight hasn't reached that part of the sky yet. So the contrast is what makes it look so bizarre. It's relatively dark near the surface, but the sky is lightening, getting lighter, but that trail is, so it's against a dark, kind of a darkish sky, too, at times. But anyway, apparently it's quite spectacular. I have a friend that took a picture of it, although it's not a great picture, but it's pretty impressive.
Yeah. So, and people are going, yeah, another rocket launch. What was significant about this one? Well, this is the same company, of course, that has sent a Tesla on its way hurtling through the solar system for how many thousands of years?
Yeah, no kidding. When the aliens show up, they're going to go, what? It's a very strange thing.
This is a different rocket. This was a Falcon 9 and did something extremely significant. The payload was two Starlink satellites into low Earth orbit. And the Starlink system is Elon Musk's vision for delivering broadband internet all over the world from low Earth orbit. Because right now, if you have satellite internet, what you're getting it from is a fixed position satellite 22,500 miles in space. That's a long distance to try to throw a signal.
Well, the satellite itself isn't fixed. It's rotating.
It's at the exact same speed that the Earth is turning.
They call it geosynchronous because at its orbit and the Earth's turning, the satellite always looks at the same place on the Earth's surface.
So the Starlink system is going to have a whole network. I think it's between, 300 to 500?
These are polar orbiters.
Actually, he wants to put thousands of these satellites into orbit and offer up a broadband internet service that would work anywhere, anytime. And the satellites are moving constantly, but using the same sort of technology that allows you to go from one cell tower to another with very rarely any sort of noticeable glitch. Your phone just hands off from one tower to another. As the satellites are moving overhead, they are handing off your internet signal from one to another.
Just like a cell tower.
Just like a cell tower. And each of these each satellite, I guess, they don't give the dimensions. I read it somewhere. They're relatively small, relatively cheap, so that if one fails, right now, if one of these multi-million-dollar satellites fails, that's a big deal. But if one of these little shoebox size, I think they're about the size of a shoebox, if they fail, first of all, when they come out of orbit, they will simply burn up.
Right. They don't pose any great threat to being.
Yeah, there's no chance they will reach the ground.
And other satellites could probably be positioned to cover that space.
And immediately the hole can be filled.
You're right. And then they have these things going on. I came across something the other day, a little bit of a diversion here that I thought was interesting. But while we're talking about satellites, the phrase nanosatellite came up. And I will look that up again. These are small satellites, and this is kind of what we're talking about here. This would qualify probably in the nanosatellite category. It's kind of interesting because there are large satellites that weigh over a ton.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anything that weighs over a ton, that's a medium satellite, is somewhere in the order of 1,000 to 2,000 pounds, or it's less than 2,000 pounds. Then there's mini satellites. Those weigh about 200 to 1,000 pounds.
Those are roughly the size of a bar refrigerator, I would say.
Something like that, yep. And then there's a micro satellite. It weighs about 20 to... right around 20 pounds.
Bigger than a bread box, smaller than a bar.
Yeah, about 2.25. And then, which is, somewhere in the human weight range there, depending on your age. Then there's nanosatellites, and they weigh from a couple pounds to about 22 pounds.
Right.
So you think of nano now, you know, nano is tiny, nano this, nano that, nanobytes, nano whatever. They're tiny, right? Well, we're not done yet. There's pico satellites, and those weigh from about a quarter of a pound to just over 2 pounds.
Okay, so what can you do with a 2 pound satellite?
We're not done yet.
Oh.
There's then the very tiniest of them all are femtos. Femto satellites then weigh just ounces. Well, it depends on what it is that you want them to do, you know. That are we going to start talking about satellite swarms and whatever? But I digress from the story, but I just thought that was really interesting that we talk about these things. And they're a big asset or a big benefit is the word I'm looking for to miniaturize satellites is to reduce the cost of them.
Yeah.
You know, heavy satellites are tough to get into space. Yeah, you might be able to have them live longer by building in more shielding, you know, so it depends on the use for that. So, obviously communications, data gathering, you might even have satellites that are helping support larger satellites in other orbits, research applications. There's all kinds of reasons that you might have itty-bitty satellites up there. The only problem with this, and this gets back to the story a little bit, about these satellites that SpaceX sent into space, is that you're creating a lot of space junk.
Right.
And tracking all of that and keeping stuff from hitting each other, because you certainly wouldn't want to destroy your communications network, for instance.
Correct.
If you have one
of
these
there are concerns that a hostile entity might seek to create swarms of satellites to smash into the satellites that
right.
we use to keep track of the bad guys.
Or your infrastructure in general. I mean, there's a lot of telecommunications satellites out there. So there's already a lot of known, if you will, object pollution in space. And NASA does spend a great deal of time tracking where these objects are because of course, it has some importance to the ISS, the International Space Station. You don't want this stuff running into that.
Well, when you smack something at 22,000 miles an hour, it hurts.
Yeah, it's going to cause quite a bit of damage, and it doesn't take anything very big to cause that kind of damage.
Right.
So this is one of the problems with these small satellites. But if they're in a closer near-Earth orbit and they fail, then they should disintegrate upon reentry into the atmosphere from friction.
Yeah.
And that kind of is like putting your junk in the incinerator.
Right.
But it still is all this stuff out there. And how many companies can you have and how big a network can you have? This has been an age-old problem with our satellites and trying to place them
and more
them.
Nations want to have
exactly.
stuff up there. Have their stuff up
right.
there.
Right. So it's sort of like the GPS global positioning system. You know, that is an Earth-wide system. This kind
the
of
Russians have Glasnost.
Same thing. Yep.
Chinese have their own GPS-type
right.
system,
right.
which is very tightly restricted.
Right. So putting all these objects in space to utilize sounds fabulous, and it is wonderful. It does allow us to use technology.
Glonast. I had Glasnost was the diplomatic word.
Yeah, there you go. But having all these objects in space, it gets a little crowded, so it's sort of like, you know, driving on crowded streets type of thing.
Right. So,
or a parking lot after.
There are new solutions, but just real quickly here, the Falcon Heavy, which was launched a couple of weeks ago and took the Tesla up, was the largest booster launch since the Saturn V. And parts of it are reusable. It's also
That's what keeps the cost of the SpaceX program down as the reusable parts.
United Launch Alliance, which is Boeing and Lockheed, have developed, say they're coming up with new booster designs as well.
Except theirs is kind of heavy, I think.
Yeah. Well, it looks to be reusable once it reaches orbit.
Okay,
and it's
go.
A scalable system.
Yeah, the reusability of it.
Another full hour of Boomer Tech Radio will be coming up right after the news. If you're listening to the podcast, you'll hear a little bit of music, and then we'll be back with more of the tech news that you can use.
Takes you to your place of work. It gets your kids to school, practice, recitals, and to visit friends and relatives. It takes you on your adventures, and it brings you home again safely. It's your car or light truck, and for most of us, it's our second biggest investment. So when your vehicle needs routine maintenance or major repairs, it just makes sense to go with the very best. Here in Shasta County, that means one thing: Advanced Automotive. Advanced Automotive is Redding's only shop that's listed on RepairPal.com, part of a nationwide network of shops that are regularly evaluated for superior training, guaranteed fair prices, and excellent customer reviews. And Advanced Automotive backs up their work with something you won't get anywhere else, a 24-month, 24,000-mile warranty. Don't just take my word for it. Log on to RepairPal.com, enter your make, model, and zip code, and read what your friends and neighbors have to say. Advanced Automotive, 5756 F West Side Road in Redding, 244-4423.
You're listening to KCNR 1460, community talk radio for the North State. This is KCNR, Shasta, Redding.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra. The procession carrying the body of the Reverend Billy Grahams reached the grounds of the library bearing his name. The procession departed from his training center near Asheville shortly after 11 a.m. this morning as motorists pulled aside and well-wishers lined freeway overpasses in a running tribute to America's pastor. A viewing will be held at the Billy Graham Library in Charlotte Monday and Tuesday. Then the remains will be transported to Washington, where he'll lie in honor in the U.S. Capitol Rotunda Wednesday and Thursday. He'll be buried Friday, March 2nd. In the wake of President Trump's recommendation of arming teachers to thwart the kind of carnage seen in last week's mass shooting at a Florida high school, not every educator is in favor of carrying a weapon. Janella Hines, who's both a teacher and a United Federation of Teachers leader, says putting guns in the hands of teachers is not the solution.
It is absolutely absurd to think that arming teachers is a viable solution to the real problem that has been exposed by the massacre in Florida.
But many people say arming teachers may be a first line of defense. 17 people were gunned down at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School when a 19-year-old former student opened fire. At the Olympics, prepare to close in South Korea, White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders says the administration's policy towards North Korea remains constant.
We're going to continue a campaign of maximum pressure. The latest sanctions are the strongest that we have had on North Korea. We're going to continue in that form. And hopefully we'll see a change on behalf of the North Koreans to start to denuclearize the peninsula.
Sanders is part of a U.S. contingent that includes President Trump's daughter Ivanka, who were in Pyeongchang for the closing ceremonies on Sunday. U.S. men's curling team gets the gold medal. They beat Sweden 10-7, a decisive upset. News and analysis at townhall.com.
You know, you can get tremendous pain relief benefits with Relief Factor without any of the negative side effects of ibuprofen. Why? Because this is natural, healthy stuff. There are no side effects. There's no prescription drugs. There's no chemicals. Just good, healthy dietary supplements that unleash your own body's natural healing powers. 80% of people who start with a quick start, just $19.95 for 3 whole weeks, end up getting more Relief Factor. You should give it a try. Again, you have nothing to lose but your pain and the whole world to gain. $19.95 comes to 95 cents a day. That's less than a cup of coffee a day for pain relief. Go to ReliefFactor.com. Read all the testimonials. Find out about it for yourself and order that quick start. Just $19.95 or 95 cents a day for 3 weeks. Or you can call them. It's toll-free. They can answer all your questions. 1-800-500-8384. That's toll-free. 1-800-500-8384. ReliefFactor.com.
An ancient necropolis near the Nile Valley city of Minya, south of Cairo, has been discovered.
It was a part of the big cemetery of the capital of the 15th nome of Upper Egypt. We found 8 shafts leading to 8 human tombs. Belonging to the families and the high priests of the god Thoth, the god of the area.
Egyptian Antiquities Minister Khaled Al-Anani says the necropolis is host to members of different families and is believed to date back to the Pharaonic late period and the Lobin area. He said it will take at least 5 years to work on the necropolis. Excavation work in the area started back in late 2017. Authorities say the death toll in a pair of explosions Friday evening in Somalia's capital of Mogadishu has risen to 21. The figures are based on reports from area hospitals. More on these stories at townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra. The maker of Cheerios also wants to fill dog bowls.
General Mills plans to buy high-end pet food maker Blue Buffalo for $8 billion. It's a return to the pet business for the more than 150-year-old company, which used to sell food for cats, dogs, and birds back in the 1950s. And it joins other food makers in the pet business. Fruit spread maker the J.M. Smucker Company, for example, owns Kibbles and Bits and Meow Mix. The deal is also a way for General Mills to further diversify its business as more people seek less processed foods. Keith Peters reporting.
French customs officers found an impressionist painting by Edgar Degas stowed on a bus more than 8 years after it was reported stolen. The French Culture Ministry says none of the passengers claimed the suitcase during a February 16th search. The painting was titled The Chorus Singers. It was stolen from a Marseille museum back in 2009. News and analysis at townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra.
From working families to small businesses or government agencies, it's important to have quality care for the cars and light trucks that are essential to getting the job done. Here in the North State, that means Advanced Automotive of Reading, where they pride themselves on old-fashioned honesty, quality personal attention, and personal responsibility to get the work done right the first time. Why else would they be able to offer a 24-month, 24,000-mile warranty on their repairs? Every mechanic at Advanced Automotive is an ASC-certified master technician who takes pride in their work, something that's earned Advanced Automotive recognition from RepairPal.com, the leading provider of auto repair and maintenance information to consumers. From the family minivan, your daughter's first car, or a yard full of company vehicles, Advanced Automotive should be your go-to repair shop. Advanced Automotive of Reading, 5756 F Westside Road. Call 244-4423 or check the customer reviews at RepairPal.com. Welcome back to Hour 2 of Boomer Tech Radio. I'm Bob Belongi.
And I'm Brenda Belongi.
We are analog, living in a digital world. Welcome to the program with goodies, gadgets, gizmos, and tech news. We certainly hope that you can use. Sponsored by Advanced Automotive of Reading here in the North State. Carried throughout the known universe via the World Wide Web. You can check out the website boomertechradio.com for the latest download. Listen to it live on your playback on your PC, or you can subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, Stitcher, or the Google Play Store. Also occasionally heard from on TuneIn Radio. We have been told and have found it there from time to time. You want to email us, boomertechradio@gmail.com, ask questions, submit requests for topics that you would like to see us cover. We try not to be the typical tech show and speak the secret code language among techies. You notice that every industry has its jargon?
Oh, absolutely. Even every artistic endeavor or Society for Creative Anachronism or something like that, or Ren Fairs, you know, they have their thing. So that's a recreational, theatrical, you know, type of thing.
It's not,
and it, even it has its own language, but everything does, abbreviations, acronyms, the whole thing, everything has that.
So we'll talk about a couple of, and we're trying to explain when we throw out acronyms, and sometimes Brenda will say, wait a minute, what does that what does that mean?
Right, definitely.
This week for mobile devices is the big kahuna, the Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, Spain. Phone makers will bring out their latest and greatest, biggest and best. Mobile World Congress kicks off in Barcelona on Monday. Smartphone sales have been kind of flat, mostly because it's like PCs, when you think about it. PCs hit a certain level of capability and market saturation to where people are saying, I don't need to buy a brand new. There hasn't been a major quantum leap, which may be the next innovation. There hasn't been a major expansion of PC capabilities. We're making them thinner, lighter, a little bit faster, but it's not, we haven't seen that new generation of processors that you just had to have in it, you know, the 286, 386, 486, you know,
the Pentium 4 and all, it's all kind of leveled out. Now, there's a i9 series of Pentium processors, but really there's no software that really takes full advantage of it. Most of the stuff, more of the emphasis is on the latest and greatest graphics cards. And, of course, they're all being sucked up by the Chinese to mine bitcoins, and you can't get a decent graphics card right now for any decent price.
Yep. So odd, you know, very interesting.
No major innovations are awaited in hands. You know, we're gonna not going to have an OLED or any particular new AI-type interface with our phones expected. The focus is going to be, of course, on new uses for existing AI systems,
mm-hmm.
as Siri and the Google Lady and Cortana all, you know, duke it out in a steel cage death match. Bixby running a very distant... Poor Samsung. They try this stuff. In fact, one of the annoying things that Brenda's going to roll her eyes about when I mention it is this... Sign into your Samsung account. I don't want a Samsung account. I've got my Google stuff. I've got my my Verizon stuff.
Relentless, persistent thing. How many times do I have to make it disappear before it finally figures out? I mean, come on. Let's have a little AI gut work here, right? A little artificial intelligence, machine learning or whatever. If you make it go away 30 times, then it stays away. If I want that, I will pursue it.
Yeah.
Don't keep
it's
showing
like Bixby
it to me. Like I forgot. Oh, Bixby is...
How many times has Bixby popped up saying, Hi, I'm here.
Hi, I'm your assistant, Bixby. Tell me what you want and I'll make it happen.
No, I want you to go away.
There we go. I'm sorry, Dave. I can't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. So, yeah. Well, one thing that is interesting, though, in this article about the...
I'm sorry, Bixby. I'm already dating the Google lady.
Poor guy.
the Google assistant lady.
Yes, that's... I'm already tied up with him.
I already got a thing going with Siri.
Yeah, whatever. Oh, my goodness. So, back to this article. One interesting thing here is that apparently, in December of 2017... the tech industry has agreed on some standards for 5G communications, in other words, fifth generation.
Right.
Most of us now have 4G connections, some less than that, usually 3G. If you've got anything less than that, it's not going to work. And much of the 3G infrastructure is being phased out. So if you have a really older smartphone or cell phone, you
Yeah, that 2005 flip phone just ain't going to cut it.
Probably not going to work anymore. So...
It's going to go the way of the bag phone.
Right. You get forced into... It's not necessarily forced obsolescence. I would just call it forced upgrading because the infrastructure just doesn't support that anymore. But at any rate, the industry has agreed upon standards for 5G, at least some of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good thing because that means any device you get that is 5G capable will work in anybody's... system. So
right.
That's a bunch of standardization.
Apparently,
there.
A lot of 5G stuff was rolled out on an experimental basis at the Winter Olympics.
Oh, yes, they had some of that.
It was quite
the
field test of the hardware.
Yeah, considering the number of people that are there and the amount of bandwidth that would be used, that definitely would make a difference. So it's kind of interesting.
Of course, the star of the show is expected to be the new Samsung S9 series of phones, the S9 and S9 Plus. Teasers suggest that the camera will have some major changes for super slow motion and improved low-light photos, which is a big bugaboo if you're trying to take low-light photos with your smartphone or very high-contrast photos. Such as if you're trying to photograph a solar eclipse.
Yes, that's difficult.
We discovered that just doesn't work, even with the heavy filtering and all that, because
yeah.
We saw the total eclipse, but there was no way to capture a decent film footage with a smartphone. You needed very specialized cameras to do that.
Well, digital cameras are capable of doing it, but it's not ones with the capability that the ones in your smartphone have.
Right. Samsung... seems to have come back nicely from the recall of the Note 7. We have Note 8s, which we're very happy with. So no big thought on my part of even looking at it. Well, we might look at an S9 just to see what it offers.
But if you have a
the Note 8 is keeping us quite busy.
Yes, and if you have a 5 or a 6 and can afford it, upgrading to the latest model might be good because these smartphone devices are now getting to the point of where they last a long time. They have applicability. Even if you move to a different phone, you can still take the device and use it as gaming device, connection, hotspot, you can't do it hotspot, mobile hotspot, but if you're plugged into sort of a force multiplier hotspot, if you want to look at it that way, you can plug into a Wi-Fi and then have other devices hooked to it. But there's all kinds of uses for older devices. So
5G is going to be 1,000 times quicker. That's pretty good. It'll download a feature film in a couple of seconds.
It would be nice. Well, so this is how you ramp up the use of the bandwidth, is that everything that goes through there just goes faster.
Yeah.
So you can carry more over the same amount of time as what's going on
now. Yeah,
the
carriers better come up with a better data, because if you can download a full movie in a second, and your consumption goes up and your next bill, you're like, ah!
Yeah.
I think that more and more companies, as the bandwidth spreads out and the infrastructure opens up more, they're going to offer their consumer pressure is going to be to offer higher bandwidth plans.
Oh, yes, definitely. And the interesting thing is going to be to see how that couples with the end of net neutrality.
Yeah.
And how those two are going to end up working together.
Right, because the whole thing behind net neutrality is that a company can push its own content ahead of other people's, you have to pay extra to get the premier speed.
Net neutrality says that was not allowed.
Right, so the repeal.
So the repeal of net neutrality will be that now you'll pay for everything that you charge, or you won't see some stuff because it's preempted by your provider's preference or people that pay to have their stuff pushed to the top. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how that works.
Yeah, and there's those who say it's absolutely going to crush and kill the internet. No, it's not going to kill the golden goose. It might slow down the egg production a little bit.
It's going to change things, and I suspect that it's going to cost the consumer more.
Yeah,
that's one thing I
that's always inevitable.
Well, true enough, but, whatever.
Interesting article in Wired. Now, we talked in the last hour about a heads-up display that literally uses a laser to put graphics in your eye, right onto your retina. Obviously, an extremely low-powered laser, there's going to have to be an awful lot of FDA. This is where the FDA gets involved in your what will be the long-term effect of focusing concentrated light on your poor, unsuspecting retina?
Yes. Oh, yeah. FDA, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
The FDA is going to have to sign off on
this. Trying to connect to that. Well, yeah, of course. You can't have something that would cause long-term damage, long-term permanent damage over a period of time. There will be people who volunteer to test this thing out. But like I said, it used to be the day that the electronics technicians would hold their eye over the waveguide in a radar, and when their eyeball warmed up, then they knew that it was actually transmitting microwaves, which in essence ended up cooking their eye.
Yeah.
Well, not all their eye. They definitely developed a particular kind of cataract related to that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I've mentioned that before, but so you have to be careful with some of these technology things. They can have unintended consequences, mm-hmm. if you will.
Now, if having to plug into your phone every night to recharge its battery, or even if it's too much trouble to set your phone on a wireless charging cradle because you still have to put it in just the right spot. new innovation coming out in this one. What could possibly go wrong? File this under. A laser recharger. A cell phone case with a receiver integrated into it, a laser transmitter. The sidebar says, you have just mounted an eyeball-bursting laser turret in a quarter of the room.
What about your pets?
You put the phone down anywhere in the room. The laser finds the phone and then aims the laser at it. I like this article. Just one little obstacle. You've met it, an eyeball-bursting laser turret in a corner of your room. It's shooting at you. Why not just hook it to the Internet of Hackable Robot Doom Things?
Yeah, there you go. And so think of, in the movies, you know, there's the, you know, some kind of ray gun pistol thing.
Yeah.
You know, a pew-pew kind of thing. That's what they're saying is it will shoot your phone. Yeah. But there is some indications, though, that, of course, they've thought of your safety in spite of all of this, right? So it's not able to damage the human eye in it is able to. The near IR laser is capable of delivering 4.3 watts per square centimeter. And would be able to damage the human eye in less than 10 microseconds, which is really short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you make sure that this doesn't happen?
Yeah, so there's a lot of little things. I don't see this becoming a mainstream product because it has to have... There's actually around the actual power-carrying laser, there's a second beam of light that is harmless, and as soon as it's interrupted, it shuts off the laser. The phone has to emit a chirping noise that you can't hear that helps the laser find the phone. Why not just go plug the stupid thing in or set it on the charging pad?
Yeah, I mean, if you're sleeping, how hard is it to set it on the charging pad next to your bedside there, you know? And it puts the charging pads all over the house. I think that's probably a more viable solution, probably cheaper, too.
USB is found now in practically every hotel room. And wireless charging, and bless their hearts, every year we went to CES, we went and visited the Wireless Charging Consortium people. And it looks like the key charger system. Now, Apple's going to go their own way because they're Apple and they're arrogant. And they like to ignore other people's technology. Well, it took forever for Apple to say, okay, there's this thing called USB. I guess we'll use it.
<laughs> 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 Oh, I suppose. This article's somewhat sarcastic. I love this. It says the only remaining problem is the same thing that has plagued laser gunners since Red Squadron tried to blow up the Death Star: targeting.
Yes, yes. He's turned off his targeting computer. Luke, what's wrong?
So it's kind of an interesting idea. I think that there will be some other universal charging kind of concept available some point.
Yeah, I think that rather than laser, I think that possibly a microwave technology of some sort is going to be a lot more practical than optical lasers.
Well, who knows? And do you really want to keep your device charged all the time anyway?
Right.
Because then the battery doesn't get exercised and you get away from any kind of ability to charge your battery and it doesn't like to charge anymore. You now have a paperweight.
Mm-hmm. Now, for people who love analog things and like to take lots of notes, if you take lots of notes, you know the name Moleskine or Moleskine.
I believe it's Moleskine.
Yeah, which is a French company that makes these. They're not French. Okay, I know they make dandy little notebooks. You did a little research on this.
I did. They have French origins, but it's actually an Italian company. It hasn't been around that long. It was founded in 1997, and it's based in Milan, Italy. And they're famous for their little notebooks and this sort of thing, which are based on those that were common in Paris in the 19th and 20th centuries. In other words, the 1800s and 1900s, so not that long ago. The style is made it's a handmade style, and they were originally made by small French bookbinders. The the types of notebooks that these are modeled
on. Right, right, right.
And so they have...
Actually have stitching.
And, stitching and rounded corners. A lot of them have little elastic closures and that sort of thing.
I have. I've had several through the years.
And they're fashioned after author Bruce Chatwin, and I'm not sure who that is, descriptions of the notebooks that he used. They're... of course, printed, stitched, and assembled in China, which is amusing.
You've seen these at Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, but the paper is acid-free, which can be very important. If you were an artist, for instance, or a writer using acid-free paper, it won't deteriorate with time.
It'll last longer.
It'll last much longer. You know, how do you go digital when you've got this very analog kind of device, and that's what this is about? This story is about is that, well, Moleskine's found a way to essentially have a digital notebook. If you like to doodle or take notes or what have you, here's the solution. And they had a tablet before that.
Or a smart pen.
Yeah, smart pen or whatever. This is a little different take on it. They've developed this thing that is actually like it's sort of like a fancy USB. It stores whatever it is that you've done. And then you can plug it into your computer later and have it reproduced.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of cool if it works. I'd like to see one of these in action.
Yeah. So apparently the paper is embedded with stuff that lets the pen know exactly where it is at any given moment as you sketch and draw. So you're kind of limited to their
ecosystem. Like everybody else, you know, plug into their ecosystem, right?
Yeah.
So it's
This is called the Ellipse Pen. If you've got money to burn on this stuff, this might be kind of fun to play with.
Right. Well, one of the things though is that if you're in some kind of environment where it's just not practical to pull out your tablet or other device to sync up with it, then using the smart writing pen could be kind of handy. I'm not sure that I do anything that where I would need that, but you never know.
Yeah.
And it's costs, I think somewhere in the
$200
range. Yeah, how's that? So the smart pen that saves your sketches and then can download into a device when it's, I think it's hooked by Bluetooth.
But the thing is, you actually work on paper, albeit a special paper.
Right.
But it stores a digital copy.
Right.
Which is kind of neat. Which is a step up from, say, like an Apple Pen or something like that.
Right.
Apple Pencil.
Mm-hmm.
MIT Technology Review, and we may roll this over the break because we're getting down close to the bottom of the hour, is listed 10 breakthrough technologies that are coming right up. Every year since 2001, they have picked what they call 10 breakthrough technologies. I'm not sure what their track record is, but we'll run down this list and... would be probably smart to revisit the list in about a year and see what
would be interesting.
What came true and what went away. For this year, a new technique in artificial intelligence called GAN is giving machines imagination. Another technology, artificial embryos. Now we get into some very interesting ethical considerations. Redefining how life can be defined and created. A pilot plant in the heart of Texas's petrochemical industry attempting to create completely clean power from natural gas. And we got lots of natural gas, and if we could eliminate all of the emissions from natural gas, that would be an extremely positive step. Let's see here. Here's some of the technologies, and we're going to talk about an extension of this. 3D metal printing. Now, we're used to 3D printing with soft, goopy plastic that doesn't have a lot of endurance, but can be very accurate. But it's mostly hobbyists and designers. Printing in anything other than plastic has been expensive and slow, and we've seen ceramics, composites, materials like that at CES used to create more durable objects. But actually, manufacturing parts out of metal... and we've discussed this on this program quite a few times, from the replacement piece for your refrigerator's ice maker to a part for your car, including, say, an entire fuel injector made on demand instead of making 1,000 fuel injectors and putting them on the shelf, or relying on a in the case of a water pump would be an ideal type of thing for 3D metal printing.
Yes, it would.
Metal printing. Instead of relying on a Chinese factory that turns out a defective piece of crap that gets stuck in your car and you have to replace it immediately, he said with a significant tone in his voice. Twice! we had an issue with a water pump on one of our vehicles. It turned out to have a big, bizarre piece of plastic in it that nobody knows how it got there. But
or
it was shipped out of the factory that way.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. I think it was somebody that was quitting the job and sabotaged
it. And stuck it in there. Anyway, they had a heck of a time troubleshooting what the problem was with this brand new water pump. So, anyway, when we come back, we'll talk about these technologies also. I'll give you some tips on how to archive old family photos, recordings, films, things like that, in a do-it-yourself manner. Boomer Tech Radio back for one more segment after these messages.
Good, honest, reliable. More than two decades ago, an auto repair shop opened in Reading based on those simple principles. Advanced Automotive is still family-owned, continuing on with those same ideals. So simple, yet rare in today's world. Modern cars and light trucks have grown more complex in the past 20-plus years, but those founding concepts still hold just as much importance when it comes to safety, reliability, and value for your dollar. Advanced Automotive of Reading promises that your vehicle will be serviced confidently by a technician with the training and knowledge to make professional repairs. Read what your friends and neighbors have to say about Advanced Automotive by going to RepairPal.com, where you can get an instant estimate of what you can expect to pay for your service or repair. Honest work at a fair price. It's not all that complicated. Advanced Automotive of Reading, 244-4423, or stop by 5756 F West Side Road.
Hello, this is Lance Beck, president of North State Security. As we celebrate our 50th year of serving Northern California region, North State Security would like to give something back to our community. During the year 2018, our 50th, in the sorrowful event your family were to lose a loved one, North State Security offers to provide a state-licensed uniformed security officer at no cost to protect your residents during the celebration of life or funeral to offer further peace of mind. Knowing thieves prey upon homes left vulnerable during these mournful times, allow us the honor to help you grieve with one less detail to be concerned about. Call us, North State Security, at 243-0295. While utilizing the service of North State Security, we handle a myriad of different responsibilities from nightly patrol service. We do special responses where you call us and we can respond to your immediate need. We can be there in an average of 10 minutes. Once again, that's North State Security at 243-0295.
The average adult is issued 32 troopers that with proper care and just a little discipline should serve you well during your entire tour of duty on this planet. They're called your teeth. But when your platoon gets out of line, holes in the formation, or other problems, you need to call in an expert like General, Dr. William Farrell, with decades of experience keeping those troops in line and executing their assigned duties properly and dependably. If you'd rather not be there while he reestablishes order amongst the troops, Dr. Farrell offers sedation dentistry. He and his highly trained staff will whip your troops into shape without any discomforts. And having served himself in both the Navy and the Marine Corps, Dr. Farrell offers special consideration to veterans. Let him take the best care of your platoon of teeth, and they will serve you always. Call 547-5757 or visit palosidrodentistry.com. At ease.
And for a limited time, Dr. Farrell is offering x-ray, exam, and cleaning for just $175. Call 547-5757 to schedule your visit.
It takes you to your place of work. It gets your kids to school, practice, recitals, and to visit friends and relatives. It takes you on your adventures, and it brings you home again safely. It's your car or light truck, and for most of us, it's our second biggest investment. So when your vehicle needs routine maintenance or major repairs, it just makes sense to go with the very best. Here in Shasta County, that means one thing, Advanced Automotive.
Advanced Automotive is Redding's only shop that's listed on RepairPal.com, part of a nationwide network of shops that are regularly evaluated for superior training, guaranteed fair prices, and excellent customer reviews. And Advanced Automotive backs up their work with something you won't get anywhere else, a 24-month, 24,000-mile warranty. Don't just take my word for it. Log on to RepairPal.com, enter your make, model, and zip code, and read what your friends and neighbors have to say. Advanced Automotive, 5756 F West Side Road in Redding, 244-4423.
And welcome back, Boomer Tech Radio, for one more segment. If you want to get in touch with us, boomertechradio@gmail.com. You can also log on to the website of boomertechradio.com. Download episodes, subscribe to the podcast. All kinds of ways to keep track of this program with tech news that you can use. So before the break, we were talking about MIT's list of innovations that are really going to change things in 2018. And the top of the list was the 3D printing of durable metals. Researchers from Lawrence Livermore announced last year that they had developed a 3D printing method for creating, get this, stainless steel parts twice as strong as traditionally made ones.
Wow.
This is a game changer.
Oh, yeah. You could probably change the molecular order, perhaps, or somehow, I don't know how that would work, to make it stronger. So, or combine things maybe that you can't do easily otherwise.
Lots
of innovation.
I'm not
sure exactly how that would work.
Another a Boston area startup, Desktop Metal, began to ship metal prototyping machines and has designs for larger machines that are 100 times faster than current metal printing methods. This is big because right now 3D printing is astonishingly slow. You see it in the movies. It just kind of whips something out like a replicator. The reality is to make a complex 3D printed object takes hours, with the existing technology, but it is going, we're in the early stages of this stuff. General Electric has long been, looking at using 3D printing to manufacture aviation products.
Sure.
They're looking forward to building jet engines almost entirely from 3D printed components. The beauty of it here is that you don't take a chunk of titanium or whatever or other exotic material and whittle away at it and end up with a pile of waste and then a small part.
There's you can also build to very precise and intricate specifications that are exactly duplicatable or whatever. Duplicable. In other words, you can have very high quality control over these parts.
Case in point, we broke a mirror on our Yukon, ordered a new mirror, and it didn't fit because the mounts were different.
The mounts were different, yeah.
At some point during that model year, the mount was changed.
Or subsequent years, and it says, oh, this will fit, these model years. Well, okay, yeah, but not our version.
Yeah. So this thing had been sitting, here we are. It had been sitting in a wrapper, in a box, in a carton, on a shelf, in a warehouse, somewhere, waiting for us to order it.
Right.
How much simpler would it be for our mechanic to say, I need this mirror, and you buy the spec print, send it to the printer, and in a couple of days, it appears on your doorstep.
Pretty amazing. That probably will happen.
Very, very soon.
Relatively soon, probably sooner than the eyeglasses that we talked about in the first hour of the show. You already talked about the artificial embryos, which show some promise for some things. What the researchers were doing probably was not going to grow into something complete, viable over time, but it was interesting how far they got in the time that they did work on it. So,
well, what the deal here is that it there's a lot of ethical questions about using human embryos for research, but
exactly.
If you can create these embryos that don't have the potential to grow into a life, but you need to test certain biological processes, this may be the way to go about it.
Well, they're not without their ethical questions, just because if they happen to turn out to be indistinguishable from real embryos, then what? And if something's grown in a lab, then what? So there's all kinds of science fiction things about that sort of thing, too. The next thing is something called Sensing City, and this is a smart city kind of concept. It's kind of an interesting thing that they're working on. There's a project in Toronto, Canada called Quayside, or Quayside, meaning dockside, basically.
Quayside, yeah.
You know, well, is that how you say it?
It's quay.
I'll have to look that up. But anyway, they don't, the Quayside or Quayside or whatever, it's sort of like the waterfront. But anyway, it's a way to rethink urban development in the sense of rebuilding it from scratch and putting in the latest digital technology. So, for instance, there's a company called Alphabet, and they have a project called Sidewalk Labs, or the Alphabet Sidewalk Labs. They're based in New York. They're working with the Canadian government to develop something for Toronto's industrial waterfront. That's where the Quayside comes in. Mm-hmm. One of the project's goals is that they're going to design this extensive network of sensors. It gathers all kinds of data, a ton of data. And they also want to have all vehicles autonomous and shared. They have robots that are wandering around doing things like, especially underground, doing things like delivering mail. That might be more reliable than the human delivering mail, who puts mail in the wrong box. Not that a robot couldn't do that, but whatever. So Sidewalk Labs says it wants to open up its software and systems to other companies so that they can develop things, particularly apps for mobile homes or phones or something like that, that fit into this system. So it's a very ambitious project in doing these things. And there are other North American cities that are already very interested in this same kind of thing. So
now, of course, the big brother questions pop up, personal privacy, things mm-hmm. like that. How will this information be used and or abused?
Well, yeah, or gathered even. You know, mm-hmm. what are they gathering?
Artificial intelligence, of course. We're hearing those buzzwords all the time. And we have talked about machines that think for as long as we've had science fiction. Usually it ends very, very badly. AI is usually most often used in the tech industry. And, of course, it can be a two-edged sword. It can do very great things or it can do very harmful things, such as being used to, if you think of the hacker in sneakers and a hoodie is bad enough, how about a artificially intelligent system being used to try to hack its way into our computer networks?
Well, and it's something like that can be very persistent.
Yeah.
Never gets bored, doesn't get tired, and it doesn't
it just runs
tough.
Programs.
Yeah, exactly.
If you wanted to make an artificial intelligence that had imagination and could come up with differing solutions, how about putting two neural networks into competition with each other arrive at a solution?
Mm-hmm.
This is a generative adversarial network. Two neural networks, let them go against each other in sort of a cat and mouse game. One is known as the generator, tasked with generating variations. The second is the discriminator, is asked to identify, say, a created picture. So very, very quickly, it says, this is, you know, this is a person. No, this is not a person. The same process that we use in our minds to interpret the world around us applied into a new form of machine learning. GANs have been put to use creating realistic-sounding speech and photorealistic fake imagery.
Photorealistic realistic fake imagery, okay.
In other words, that Van Gogh may not really be a Van Gogh.
There we go, right? It's kind of interesting. That's a little, kind of an esoteric concept, these GANs and that sort of thing. Another thing coming up may be babblefish earbuds. And, of course, the babblefish comes from the cult sci-fi classic, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And you slide this little fish into your ear to get translations of things in an instant. You know, in the real world, that's not going to happen. But Google has about a $160 pair of earbuds called Pixel Buds. These work with its Pixel smartphones.
Oh, babblefish. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I had to take a call there.
Oh, yeah. I call them babblefish, but, you know, I guess it's babblefish. One person wears the earbuds and the other holds a phone. Earbud wearer speaks in his or her language. English is the default, and the app translates the talking as it plays aloud on the other phone. And when the person holding the phone responds, the response is translated and played through the earbuds. So this is, you know, why didn't they just say the universal translator?
Yeah, it's really Captain the way Kirk's it is. So, universal translator.
Babel, babblefish translators. So, you know, these, I think, this idea definitely has a lot of merit. The unfortunate thing is, and where's the incentive to learn another language for yourself, but yeah. Maybe that'll become more of an esoteric thing. Latin is not spoken by anyone anymore, for instance, but there's still plenty of people who study it and that sort of thing. In fact, in our parents' era in high school, people did take Latin. Yeah. When we came along, not so much.
So wind and solar, there's those who say that wind and solar is going to be it for everything, but it's not, of course. The infrastructure required, reliability of the sources, the side effects such as birds being swatted out of the air, or vast tracts
environmental
of the land being, what do you do with these panels when they wear out, things like that. Now, one thing that the planet seems to have a pretty good amount of is natural gas. And natural gas, of course, burns a whole lot cleaner than, say, it burns a whole lot cleaner than coal, much cleaner than oil, but it still does generate CO2. Well, a power plant just outside Houston is testing a technology that is a 50-megawatt power plant. They believe that they can capture essentially all of the CO2 released in the process. If this technology comes to fruition, the world would have a way to produce carbon-free energy from a fossil fuel. Now, it doesn't say where all the carbon ends up. Okay, the plant puts the carbon dioxide under high pressure and heat, uses the carbon dioxide to be recycled as a sort of fluid. Interesting, under high pressure and heat, I guess that's what happens to carbon dioxide. It doesn't say what you do with it after you're done with it.
Makes you wonder, right?
Mm-hmm.
See what happens.
Okay, now this is an interesting. I'm actually skipping down to the genetic fortune telling one. If you have ever watched the movie Gattaca, upon birth in this world depicted in the film Gattaca with Ethan Hawke, it came out. I'll have you look up what year Gattaca came. Gattica. Gattaca. But it foretells a future where as soon as someone is born, their genetic profile is taken. And in the case of the protagonist of the movie, it reveals that he has a defect that will cause him to have a heart disease and die by the time he's 30. And therefore, he is not worth training and hiring in the corporate environment. And the story deals with him borrowing blood samples from an individual who has a perfect genetic profile but has been injured in an accident.
1997.
Yeah. Very foretelling. And it's turned into sort of a cult film, but it's worth watching, especially with this next article here, genetic fortune telling, babies will get DNA report cards at birth. The reports will offer predictions on their chances of suffering heart attack, of cancer, of getting hooked on drugs, or being smarter than average.
Just imagine the social things that's going to lead to.
Yeah. Turns out that most common diseases and many behaviors and traits, including intelligence, maybe a violent tendency, are the result of not one or a few genes, but many acting in concert.
Of course.
So you can create a profile and create what they call polygenic risk scores. Now, this kind of moves us in an uncomfortable direction, heading towards uncomfortably close, I think, to eugenics, mm-hmm. which was the movement in the early 20th century to create more perfect humans.
Yep. Well, that's, you know, some kind of social determination of what a more perfect human is. And actually, you know, I just off the top of my head, one of our strengths as a species is our genetic diversity.
Yeah.
I mean, go to the park and take a look around, and you're going to see family resemblances, mm-hmm. yes, but you see a huge spectrum of everything.
Now, we
about
see
humans.
Abuse of things like early testing of a pregnancy. In some cultures, if it's a girl, the pregnancy is terminated, so you end up with a culture. This became a problem in China where boys were far more valued.
Yes, but the.
And you end up with a whole. With a very. Wide imbalance.
Right, but the backlash of that, the unintended consequences of that, is that now if you have a daughter, she is able to pick and choose.
Very much, yeah.
And can marry well by whatever those standards are in their culture. And very, very popular. So now girls are welcome back into the gene pool, literally.
Indeed.
I mean, that was not well thought out if you mostly have males. Where are your females going to come from for reproduction?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, come on.
It's like the movie Children of Men, where a disease... And of course, a Handmaid's Tale, where it becomes difficult for women to become pregnant at all. Children of Men, same thing. Women can't conceive for some environmental reason, and results in a complete upheaval of the social order.
You think?
Before we wrap up here, I wanted to touch on this story. Suddenly, you find yourself staring at a large box of family heirloom photos, and it's a shoebox with a whole bunch of historic black and white photos or albums of an entire family's history, you know, from back in the age of the Instamatic and the Super 8 camera. Suddenly, you've got all these disorganized, fragile, perishable images.
Pieces of media.
Yeah, these pieces of media. So genealogists actually have some ideas on how to preserve family images and records, not just for your current family, but for future generations and possible even research. Old home movies are deteriorating every day as the colors are fading out. The material is disintegrating. There are services like Legacy Box, where you send in the film and they digitize it, and then frame stills can be generated from it. There are companies here in Reading that offer that service. 8 and Super 8 films are rather tricky to digitize.
Yes.
It takes some sophisticated equipment.
Yes, it does.
There are do-it-yourself systems. The thing about film is that you can't just park a video camera in front of a film projector because the frame rate is different.
Right. It makes for some very incompatible viewing.
Right.
You
get weird lines and stuff like that. The reason is that typically your video is shot at between 30 and 60 frames per second. Motion picture film, traditional motion picture film, is 24 frames per second, and home movies like Super 8 varied between 19 and 17 frames per second, depending on the manufacturer.
On the camera's manufacturer. Wow.
Yeah.
Very complicated. So, potential incompatibilities, and nobody was thinking about this, of course, back in the day when they were developing home movie cameras and that sort of thing. Not a clue about how this was going to go.
So what the conversion process has
clue,
to do, so what you end up having to do is take a image, a high-resolution image of each individual frame of film and store it.
Yep.
So if you think about that, if you've got the typical reel of Super 8 film runs about 3 minutes. At 18 frames a second, that's a whole lot of frames.
Yep, that is a lot of frames.
Then all that has to be stitched together, and through a scaling process, converted to the 30 frames per second that we are more familiar with in our video, 30 to 60 frames a second, which is what we're more familiar with.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If you have old photo albums, don't tear them apart. Leave them, because for one thing, you could destroy the photos, or maybe they were put in that in those albums for a particular reason.
Mm-hmm.
Expert suggests to preserve the album, take a piece of unbleached muslin, that cloth that hasn't been treated with any fabric softeners, wrap the album to keep all the loose pieces together, store in an acid-free box while you find a service that can transfer these over. Documents such as church and hospital records can be shared with services, can be uploaded to Dropbox or Google Drive. They can be shared with services like FamilySearch, MyHeritage, or Ancestry.
Right, and you want to use more than one, because if you digitize everything, you definitely need a couple of backups.
Yeah.
So have it local, or hard drive at home is okay, but also use a cloud service because you're less likely to lose them mm-hmm. there.
Now, you don't really need a high-end flatbed scanner to preserve the old family photos and things like that. That's 10-year-old thinking. With our new smartphones, it's fairly easy to put together a document scanner. In fact, I use my smartphone to scan receipts and contracts and documents all the time so that I've got a permanent copy of them.
Mm-hmm.
And with the high-resolution camera that comes on most smartphones, it's as good as any flatbed scanner, and you've got a permanent copy. You could actually set up a rig fairly easily with proper lighting to be able to scan family mm-hmm. photos
yep.
right onto your smartphone's memory and then share up to the cloud.
Right. And then another way you can distribute things, of course, is to use social media so that those pictures get out there in even more archive locations. That's definitely something that's worthwhile. Another thing, too, when you're done with the hard copies, if you really don't want to pack those around, check with your local historic society to see if they would be interested in keeping them, because many of these historic societies have ways of storing these images so that they deteriorate less rapidly.
Yeah, yeah,
they do with time anyway. But it may be of great deal of interest to folks and researchers as well.
Yeah.
It may not seem like it, but you never know.
Now, I, with my... In fact, what I'm doing over this weekend as a project is somebody gave me a bunch of old VHS tapes to copy over into digital files. And there's a number of services that do that. Same with LP records. There are some LP records that were simply never sent out on CD or any other format. And this is something you can do at home. If you've got a turntable, you can do this all by your lonesome. There's a free, we like free.
Free is good.
Free is very good. But there's a free program called Audacity, Audacity, comes for just about any computing platform, and it's a high-quality recording program, so you record your cassette tape or reel, if you've got the equipment to do it with, capture it into a digital format, and I've done this for people. And then, once it's in the digital format, you can make basically an indefinite number of copies to share around, pass around, and basically preserve from loss.
Another thing about archiving your family heirloom photographs and such like is you can add modern technology twist to it. You can actually have younger relatives interview the older ones to tell more about what's in the picture, and create a digital record, audio record, or video record of this sort of thing as well. And that's just adds some interest to it for future generations, if nothing else. It's a modern twist to these things. You know, how many times have you seen these old images, and it just has names of people on the back? At one point, everybody in the family knew who that was, and the stories behind them. But, you know, with today's families being scattered around the country or the world, sometimes you don't always hear those stories,
right.
So having those audio trails, it's sort of like NPR's storyboard or whatever they call it on Fridays. There's archived stories in the Library of Congress.
One of the tasks that sits ahead of me is my mom had in a closet a vast array of photo albums, reel after reel of 8mm film, both old and Super 8, and some historic photos. most of which lack context. And it's going to be interesting trying to go through those. And some of those have, I believe, some historic significance.
It could be, at least locally anyway.
Indeed. So all the time for this week's Boomer Tech Radio. We want to thank you very much for listening to the show. Let us give us some feedback. Let us know how we're doing. It's Bob and Brenda saying, wherever you go, whatever you do, be safe and be good to each other.
From working families to small businesses or government agencies, it's important to have quality care for the cars and light trucks that are essential to getting the job done. Here in the North State, that means Advanced Automotive of Reading, where they pride themselves on old-fashioned honesty, quality personal attention, and personal responsibility to get the work done right the first time. Why else would they be able to offer a 24-month, 24,000-mile warranty on their repairs? Every mechanic at Advanced Automotive is an ASC-certified master technician who takes pride in their work, something that's earned Advanced Automotive recognition from RepairPal.com, the leading provider of auto repair and maintenance information to consumers. From the family minivan, your daughter's first car, or a yard full of company vehicles, Advanced Automotive should be your go-to repair shop. Advanced Automotive of Reading, 5756 F Westside Road. Call 244-4423 or check the customer reviews at RepairPal.com.
You're listening to KCNR 1460, Community Talk Radio for the North State. This is KCNR, Shasta, Reading.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra. The Reverend Billy Graham's body now in Charlotte at the library bearing the late evangelist's name after a four-hour trip that started out from Asheville this morning. It's the first day of a nine-day period of mourning before the funeral March 2nd, which Graham himself planned.
A Graham family spokesman says the music and those speaking at the event will all have connections to Graham's life and ministry. The invitation-only funeral will be held in a tent at Graham's.